Welcome to the It's All Happening Women in CPG podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Calabrese, former CPG founder turned executive who finally woke up one day, 16 years into my career, and decided to take back my power and build a community for women in CPG. Tune in as we break down strategies that successful female entrepreneurs are using to build their businesses and talk about what it's like to be a woman in a male-dominated industry. You'll hear stories of the people who make shit happen, overcoming struggles, and celebrating the wins. Whether you're looking for inspiration, industry secrets, or life-changing insights, this is the place.
All right, buckle up because today's episode is a must listen for any early stage founder navigating the wild world of CPG. I sat down with Sydney Wehner, who is the powerhouse CEO founder behind French Squirrel, to chat about the realities of scaling a brand from mastering unit economics to make the tough call to say no to retailers. Yes, I know that sounds scary. But Sydney also opens up about how her own health issues and gut issues inspired her product line and what it was like to leave her job at Erewhon to go all in on French Squirrel. We also talk about her Erewhon collab as well. So this convo is packed with insights on building a sustainable business, making strategic decisions, and trusting your gut literally and figuratively. Let's get into it. Sydney, welcome to the It's All Happening Women in CPG podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yes, of course. I'm so happy to have you here. I have been following the French Squirrel journey for a while, and I just love what you're doing. I first discovered you, I think, at Erewhon a while back, but I didn't really know a lot about your brand until I saw the Erewhon collab smoothie, which was such a hit. Congrats on that. What a fun partnership. And then I listened to a podcast that you did with Sarah Delavan of the Good Food CFO, who I'm a huge fan of. And she's also teaching a workshop in my masterclass, which I love. She's so awesome. So that's how I started to like discover you. And then I was like, I need to know Sydney. I need to like meet her and like learn about her business and what she's up to. And then we got to meet at Expo West in person, which was so fun. And you were part of the pop-up event that we did, the Ladies Lounge. So yes, welcome. Yay. I'm glad we get to chat today.
Thank you so much. And it was so nice to meet you in person at Expo West and meet so many other female founders. That was crazy. I have a video of how many women were all stuck in that corner there. And it was so cool. And to see founders that I've known for a while and then new female founders in the space that are just starting out. It was really cool to see that that variance. And thank you for organizing that.
Yeah, yeah, I know. That was definitely a fun event. So I'm going to ask you the question that I ask all my guests when we first get going. What are you currently hustling for?
I'm hustling for, this is the first thing that just came to my head, healing the world, which I know is a bold statement, but I share my own healing journey online, which is how I've built this loyal following and loyal community. And if my journey can help one person, I know it sounds cliche, but my work is done. Seriously. Yeah. Like it's unbelievable. And it's actually why I keep going, because of all the messages that I get about sharing my health journey.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And you know what? I love that so much too. I love the content you put out, like your founder content, because I too like have been on a major health journey for like over a decade, but like with different ebbs and flows. And I love your content, how you've been so open about your journey with that. So I love that.
Thank you. Thank you.
I love that. So you recently put out a cookbook too.
I did. So I've been on two healing journeys, if you will, like, you know, to couple them into two boats. The first was actually how I started French Squirrel, which was I was diagnosed with PCOS. I wasn't getting my period. I just posted a video on this actually like 10 minutes ago before we even started this right now, which was that everyone told me, oh my God, you look so good. Because I was thin by society standards. I looked like I was what I was supposed to look like. But inside, nobody knew that I wasn't getting my period. My hair was super thin. I was struggling with, you know, hormone imbalances. Versus now I can actually say, no, I am healthy. Thank God. But the first journey was the PCOS journey. Okay. And I'll go back to that when we get into how I started the company. But related to the cookbook is my second healing journey, which was me being burnt out as a founder, not taking care of myself.
Yep.
Even though I was this health and wellness CPG founder, I definitely, you know, I was in the rat race, I think, a little bit. Yeah. The hustle, keep going. And I burnt out and I was not taking care of my health and specifically my gut health, which I didn't know about. Yeah. And that's when I started following the Candida cleanse, Candida diet, however you want to call it, after all these mystery symptoms that I was struggling with silently for years. Mm-hmm. No one could figure it out. No one could put it together, no matter how many doctors I went to. And after months, I finally got diagnosed, and then I went on this whole healing journey to heal my gut from Candida. And I was so amazed by what this diet, I hate the word diet.
Yeah, food regime. You
regime,
know?
Yeah. Protocol did for me. And it was like, wow, I can't not share this.
Yeah.
Because it changed my life. And I'm blowing up on TikTok right now because so many women specifically are struggling with all the things that I'm talking about that were these mystery symptoms that I had no idea were connected to my gut health. So I started sharing recipes. Everyone said, can you please launch a guide or a cookbook or something? And I was like, you know what? Why not? And so I started to make a cookbook. And, you know, it's a physical hardcover that you can order on Amazon. And so I put it on Amazon, and it's not for the money. It's literally just because it's a passion project of mine.
So
that's the cookbook.
I love that. Honestly, there's so many people that struggle with like all of these mystery symptoms. And isn't it, it's like when you find something that works for you, like I had to go, I was so burnt out and so just like my health was so out of whack. You couldn't tell on the outside, but I was like really struggling, you know?
What was happening, if you don't mind?
Just similar, same thing, hormones, gut, like the, you know, all of the skin issues, eczema, sleeplessness, thinning hair, everything was out of whack. Pesky weight gain that I like couldn't get off. And I went on a 6-month autoimmune reset, which is like super, super hardcore. I lost 25 pounds. My skin lightened up. I cleared up my eczema. I like became a new person, you know?
Yeah.
And
I feel like I became a new person too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the weight thing, everyone would say something to me and I'm like, it's literally inflammation that's just melted.
Inflammation. Yeah. Totally.
And it's just from being not feeling at home in your body, which is a horrible feeling, and you don't actually realize it until you're on the other side sometimes.
Exactly. Inflammation is so common.
Yeah.
It's just like I was inflamed by stress, honestly. Stress was like really driving my inflammation. So I need to check out your cookbook. I've seen it, but I haven't actually read it. I'm gonna get it.
It's the reason I made it actually is because I had no guide and no help when I was starting the Candida diet. I read this one book, which I highly recommend, but it was too restrictive. So the reason I made the cookbook is because it's a balanced approach to the Candida diet, because the Candida diet is essentially low carb, which doesn't allow you to feel fullness sometimes and satisfaction, which is very important to me as someone who's spreading the message of intuitive eating. And here I am launching a cookbook that's low carb, but it's high protein, high fat, and they every every time I finished eating these meals, I felt satisfied and happy.
Yeah.
And I did not feel deprived. And when I read books like, and this is not to you know, spread any negativity on a book. It was a great guideline. The Body Ecology Diet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yep, of
and
course.
It was way too restrictive for me. Uh-huh. I was hungry after every single recipe in that book. I started to follow things and I was like, there has to be another way to heal this while also feeling satisfied and having fun with it. And that's when I launched the cookbook, making recipes that actually tasted good, but still followed the Candida protocol. So that's where it comes from.
Yeah. I know. That's why so many people fall off, and because it's just like, you know, what you have to do to clean up your gut is like really, really restrict a lot of the foods. And it's just hard for people because, you know, the whole fullness thing. So
yeah.
Cool. 100%. So, all right. So I want to talk. Okay. So you worked at Erewhon for several years, I believe 4 years or three, 4 years, right?
4 years, yes.
In brand management. And from what I've read and what I've heard, that's how you really developed French Squirrel, is you were bringing yummy like bite snacks to work and people started to ask you about them. So like, tell us, you know, give us like the high level on how you developed French Squirrel and like, what was the inspiration behind it?
Yeah. So, I started to make these protein bites that were part of the first healing journey that I was talking about, because I needed to eat more and snack more while I was healing my hormones and trying to get my period back. So I was making snacks that had protein, healthy fats, and I was making these peanut butter protein bites that I would dunk in chocolate, and I ate them around 3-4 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Every day behind my desk, and I was working for Erewhon. How I got into the health food space, I've always been into food since I was little, but then it just kind of morphed into the health food space because of my journey. And so I started working for Erewhon right after college, and I was such a CPG freak even then. Like I told them, I know every brand that's in your store and I can tell you like about all these brands. And I would stay, it's my favorite activity. I would stay in the store for an hour plus just looking over things.
Browsing,
looking at the packaging, looking at the branding. Oh, that's interesting. They're using coconut nectar in this instead of maple syrup. Oh, what an interesting sweetener. Like I was, you know, soaking it all up. Yeah. And, you know, part of it was 100% disordered because I was looking at ingredients too much. You know, there's a part of that which is orthorexia, from what I understand, and that was years ago. Okay. So I'm acknowledging that.
Right.
That was many years ago. But I started working for Erewhon in their corporate offices, and I would eat these protein bites behind my desk every day. And my boss at the time, Vito, who's the vice president of Erewhon, he was always like, why are you eating the same snack behind your desk? Like, what are those? And it's like he's like an Italian man and super like hardcore. And I'm like over there just behind my desk eating these bites. And he's like, can I have one? I said, sure. So I open up my Tupperware. I gave him the protein bites. And he said, you would be mistaken if you do not package these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. And I had my French Squirrel Instagram at the time where I was just posting recipes, posting videos of me making these protein bites.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. It was my blog, my food blog. Mm-hmm. And how I was healing my PCOS, what I was doing, you know, the doing acupuncture and cupping. Like, I shared all of this.
Yeah.
And I just had my French Squirrel Instagram. And so I listened to him. Mm-hmm. And I started to research packaging, graphic designers, commercial kitchens, you know, food handler's license, all the stuff.
Yeah.
And I started to create the protein bites in my commercial kitchen, and I launched them at Erewhon. And so, I came out with fun. Three flavors. It's crazy. Three flavors, yeah. Peanut butter, almond butter, sunflower seed butter. And I launched them and I just posted it on my Instagram. Hey guys, super excited. These protein bites that I've been videoing for the last few months, I packaged. Wow. Long story short, I could not keep my full-time job because mm-hmm. I was selling out every single weekend at Erewhon.
So when did you launch at Erewhon? What year?
August of 2020.
Okay, so August of 2020, you launched.
The idea was in June. It took me two months to bring it to market, less.
That's really fast.
Really fast.
Okay, so
that's what I'm saying. I had no business plan.
Yeah.
I had nothing.
Did you know that 70 to 80% of CPG brands fail within the first year? Yikes. Because they lack a strategic go-to-market plan, they start without enough funding, or they don't have a clear path to sustainable growth. We've got you covered though. So in Launch Lab, you'll learn how to launch, grow, and scale your brand the right way. We'll give you a step-by-step roadmap, insider strategies for success, marketing and sales playbook, funding and financial guidance. So this is for you if you're a first-time food and beverage CPG founder, you have an idea for a brand and you need a playbook, you're in the early stages and you haven't yet nailed your go-to-market strategy, or you want to expand, you're navigating farmers markets or Shopify and want to venture into retail. Maybe you're developing your product and you're delving into formulation or contemplating a retail entrance. You need strategic guidance. You can be operational, but you're still seeking to refine your go-to-market strategy. Launch Lab Masterclass March, April, May session is sold out. But not to worry, we're launching another session in September. We kick off that first week of September. So go to the show notes and sign up to be on the wait list to get notifications about when early registration opens up. Trust me, if you are doing this for the first time, this is an educational session you absolutely do not want to miss. Okay, so you launched, and then did you immediately go into distribution, or were you going direct to Erewhon at first?
Great question. See, this is because you know CPG and you know how to, yes, directly for the first 2 months. Okay. Selling, me driving
to each location.
To each location, having my assistant, who is my best friend's sister, drive around and help me deliver packages all over to UPS,
to all the locations.
And then about two, three months in, I had a recommendation from Erewhon because Erewhon was starting to not take direct vendors anymore,
saying, hey,
we'd love for you to work with a distributor. Here's one that we recommend that is really a great incubator for small brands. It's not a UNFI, it's not a KeHE, they're not going to swallow you up. Here's a direct distributor that is very, you know, like touchy-feely with brands and will help hold your hand. Yeah. And I'll shout them out because I love them. Foundation Foods. Mm-hmm. If you are a food brand that's in the organic space, they're strict on who they bring on. They don't just bring on everyone. Yeah. But if you're in the healthier ingredients, better for you space, they'll bring you on. They're out of San Clemente and I absolutely love them.
Yeah. I've never worked with them personally, but I've heard like really positive things about them, which is kind of rare for distributors.
Very rare.
Cool. So then, all right. So you move over to Foundation and you were also selling online. You'd launched a Shopify website as well too?
After like a month or two.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't even more. I was first only in stores.
First at Erewhon and then you later launched to Shopify. Okay. And then at what point did it start to get too much for you where you were like, you know, I know you said you were with, you stayed at Erewhon till end of 23, right?
Yes. So I was.
And how were they cool with you, like doing both things?
Well, so first, it shows a lot about them as a company that they allowed me that they knew this was going on the side. A lot of companies don't like that when you're doing something else. So they fully encouraged me, which shows a lot about them in a positive light. And I'm super grateful and thankful. I could not do that if I didn't have their blessing. But I started working for them in February of 2020, And then I left in March of 23, but then I was a consultant remotely for the a year after.
Okay. Okay.
They asked me to stay on because I'm not going to gas myself up, but I am going to say I have a pulse on the food space.
Sure.
So I'm not just any employee that's like, you know, clocking in, clocking out. Mm-hmm. It's my everything, this business. Yeah. Like the food space is I love it. And I think because of that, that's why I stayed on. Yeah. That's why they asked me to stay on, and that's why I stayed on.
So what had to be in place for you to feel comfortable leaving your stable 9-to-5?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. No, this is a great question. And it's a very niche question, and it doesn't apply to everyone because you have to determine your level of risk. Yeah. And so it depends on the person. The amount of people who told me, you're still working there? Wow. Like some people on the outside could be like, oh, maybe she should have stayed there longer. Or other people could have said, oh, why didn't you leave sooner? It's all determined by perspective. Totally. For me, it got to the point where financially I had to make a decision where I was comfortable enough to leave and have a little bit of a blanket and a couple months to work on it. Mm-hmm. It definitely took way longer than I thought. Mm. Not leaving, I don't mean that, like turning the business around for it to be a profitable and have positive cash flow took a huge mindset shift and rewiring. But I had to leave before I was actually ready. And that's something that no one wants to hear. I left before the business was actually 100% ready for me to leave.
Yeah.
How I knew I had to leave was that I had to invest in myself, and I wasn't showing up at Erewhon in the same way that I was showing up years ago. And it was a disservice to them to be there while my mind was being occupied by this business. French Squirrel was taking the forefront, then that means that I was doing a disservice, and I had to take the risk. I unfortunately don't have a financial metric that I can share to be like, this is when I was comfortable enough and secure. It's actually just an energetic thing.
Yeah.
And I know that's not really an answer that, you know.
Okay. Let me ask you a different question related to the same topic. What were the levers and the things that you had to pull to become break even and positive cash flow? What are the things that you had to change?
Sure. I wouldn't have left if revenue was not going up.
Right.
Revenue was going up. My cost of goods was also going up. Okay? And I don't even know how I balanced the profit there while I was working at Erewhon. What I knew is, okay, I can focus on revenue going up. When I leave Erewhon, I can focus on bringing the cost of goods down.
Yeah.
That's my answer. Mm-hmm. I could not focus on bringing the cost of goods down while I was working at Erewhon.
Yeah.
Because I could not sit in an analytical state and actually dissect how to make this a profitable business, because I was only focusing on next, what's next, grow. Oh, this retailer wants French Squirrel? Okay, go. This retailer wants French Squirrel? Okay, go. I saw the revenue going up. Yeah. I saw sales going up, but I couldn't sit because my mind was so occupied by my full-time job that I was not till midnight at night that I could think, I wonder if I could get a better source of organic almond butter. Maybe I should contact someone so I could get a cheaper price so that I could bring my cost of goods down.
Yeah.
That was not my priority. Mm-hmm. So I think once you ultimately really realize that there's the possibility to bring the cost of goods down, but revenue's going up, that for me was when I was like, okay, I can leave now because I know what I have to do. How I shifted the business, and this is where Sarah Delavan comes in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It completely changed the whole business. And I've told Sarah this multiple times, and I owe her a lot.
Yeah.
I actually remember how I found her. I was on the treadmill at Equinox. Okay. And yeah. I'm just doing my thing, whatever, whatever. And somehow I find a podcast episode that she did with Lauren Monty of Monty's Cheese. Okay. And Lauren Monty is one of my good friends in the space.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, she worked with Sarah. That's so cool. Like, yeah. Lauren is an inspiration to me, what she's doing. And I called Lauren up and I said, who is this woman?
Yeah.
And long story short, I start working with her.
Amazing.
Because I could not get the business in line to a point where mm-hmm. I was putting money in the business, paying yeah. myself back, putting it in, da 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 da. Like it was a nightmare.
And so were you at break even at that point, or were you losing?
Honestly, I was breaking even, but I would say I was even dipping into losing.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And no one talks about it,
yeah.
but it's the food space.
It's
and
so
revenue was going up. I'm like increasing sales. How am I losing money?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was crazy because, you know, I'm grateful that mm-hmm. I'm in the position where I could lose money. A lot mm-hmm. of people can't take this risk financially because they can't take the risk. So I'm yeah. grateful and I acknowledge my privilege with that. But I had to turn the business around. And so yeah. I asked Sarah for help, but it took us a long time to
How
get
long?
There. I was working with her for a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That sounds about right. Yeah.
And it was because it was my own mental block.
Mm.
And I know it sounds crazy. And then it goes back to no financial metrics. It
right.
goes back to no numbers. It was Sydney's
yeah.
perspective. It was my issue. And what mm-hmm. the issue was is I put a price tag on my product because of what I was told I should put this at. Oh, no one is going to buy your product
yeah.
if
yeah.
it's over $10,
mm-hmm.
people were telling me about these things that I learned in college. What is it? Price.
Yeah. Price sensitivity or price.
Yes. The yeah. numbers yeah. and people's uh-huh. brain and the decimal point.
The psychology.
Yep.
Yeah. I know.
The psychology. And uh-huh. I'm like, okay. And I hit a light bulb moment with Sarah.
Yeah.
Where I realized, okay, I listened to her podcast.
Mm-hmm.
In the food business, you need to sell a unit enough to have enough money in the bank to produce another unit.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's like Sarah's brilliant concept, and I love that
yeah.
she talks about this because it is so challenging for because people don't understand that,
no.
right? Even people who've been in this business for a long time don't understand it. It's like, oh, but wait, every unit that I make, I'm profiting $2.50. Well, no, you're not. You've got to make the next piece of inventory and you have to fund all your SG&A expenses,
yep.
your overhead and your marketing. So no, actually every time you sell a unit, you're maybe losing, you know, you have to pump $3 into the business or something.
100%. And it was a mystery. I'm looking at the P&L and Sarah said to me, and so this is my number one compliment that we get when accountants, financial advisors look at our P&L, you run such a lean business.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't spending it on anything. I was doing mm-hmm. my own marketing. All I was doing was spending it on ingredients, packaging, labor, co-manufacturing. I was not spending it on a billboard or a magazine
yeah.
or PR.
Yeah.
Like, it was a mystery. And it took us a year to get there. Finally, I'm realizing I'm not charging enough.
Mm-hmm.
French Squirrel is going to go out of business. Forget lowering the cost for a second.
Yeah.
Because I can't lower the costs anymore without compromising quality. I have to be charging more.
Yeah.
Because French Squirrel can't stay in business unless I'm in at a certain margin where yeah. I'm making enough money back to produce another unit. And it was like, phew.
Yeah.
How
yeah.
did I not know? How did it take me 4 years to know this?
because we're conditioned to look at our competitive set and price mm-hmm. in line mm-hmm. with our competitors. But what we're not always taking into consideration is the fact that some of these brands have been around for 5 years, 10 years, 12 years, sometimes way more than that, right? And some of them are owned by like major CPGs, and you just can't compete with those. It's just, it's impossible as like a small business, right?
Yeah.
So you have to charge more. I just got off the phone with a client 30 minutes ago before we hopped on here, and we were having the same exact conversation.
Really?
An amazing, two amazing founders, and they're in the coffee space. And they haven't started to expand and get into retail yet. They're just D2C, but we're uncovering that they're priced incorrectly and that they're way too low to support their production build of that next unit.
Right.
They don't have enough margin. So, and they're definitely, you know, not prepared to continue just to dump tons of money into the company. So the way to offset it is, sure, tighten up your cost of goods, but you have to increase your price. And that can be...
It changed everything. Yeah. I have not positive cash flow, feeling secure, feeling confident.
Yeah. Yeah. Good
but
for
what
you.
That comes with is saying no, which is what
okay,
you...
Okay, so let's talk about that. I want to talk about that. So, okay, you're a early stage CPG founder. You've already got like one of like the, you know, the best, the best retailers out there. Like... the most visible retailers, and you get other opportunities. You explain this on Sarah's podcast. You get other opportunities, but these opportunities just like aren't penciling. You know, they're not going to, sure, maybe they're going to give you a little bit more visibility, but they're definitely going to not give you, you know, more dollars in your bank account. How did you analyze that? And like, what did that process look like for you of saying no to people that you are like conditioned as a founder that you need to be sold on their shelves? That must be really hard.
And that's why I'm saying the whole business shifted when I adopted a different mindset.
Yeah.
Of like, no, French Squirrel can only stay in business if I charge this price.
Yeah.
Clearly. And we got a last year's Expo West, we got a really big account. That's the biggest account that's ever approached us. Mm-hmm. And I said yes. And I was squeezing myself so thin, technically making money, technically. Uh-huh. It wasn't losing money.
Yeah.
But it wasn't enough of a margin that it made sense for the business. And I said mm-hmm. yes. And I had to stop working with them.
You had to back out?
I had to back out after uh-huh. After a year or so. And what that process was like is conditioning myself to say, okay, to say no, which is hard. Yeah. And I don't want to play the female card, but I'm going to have to play the female card because I've talked about this with Sarah. It's a people-pleasing thing. It's a mm-hmm. women thing where we have to say, oh, we have feel uncomfortable saying no.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it's totally a female thing. And I even wrote that down when we were talking. I wrote it on my notepad because it's something that I've had to rewire. And I've had people approach me now, companies. They say, we're interested in the product. I give the pricing. And they say, that's not going to work for us. Can you meet us at blah, blah, blah?
Uh-huh.
No, I can't. Yeah. I'm sorry. Uh-huh.
Okay, so the what percentage of like deals that come through to you are you having to say no to right now?
Honestly, not that many anymore because I'm building the brand and actively trying to get the price down. But I have a range. So I think now I don't know what the percentage of what I would say no to. I don't have that number, but it's not that many. Mm-hmm. It's that I would say advice for CPG founders, like when you figure out what that margin is where you need to be in, it's a range, right? It's not one number. It's mm-hmm. a range. So I toggle now in my Excel spreadsheet and I like kind of just play with the numbers and I see.
Yeah.
And it's a range so that you're not so rigid. It's like I didn't really want to go down that low, but I could go down that low.
Uh-huh.
You know, like I say I have a 10% range, like where it's not really where I want to, I don't want to go all the way down, but I have some room in case a retailer is like, oh, I can, you know, and, and that's what I say is because you don't want to be so rigid. And the problem with the food business is it's what came first, the chicken or the egg.
Yeah.
In order to get the cost of goods down, you need to have a purchase order that's high enough to fund, to be able to pass that on to the manufacturer to lower the cost. But then you can't get the retailer until you lower the cost.
Totally.
So it's a dance.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Would you say that you've actually slowed your growth, or has slowing your growth put more dollars in your bank account?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
We've slowed our growth 100%. Yeah. Scaled back.
This is a very tough concept for founders.
Very. And I had to even explain it on an investor call. Just I just take calls to like, here, we've been completely bootstrapped, but I like to take calls, build relationships.
Yeah.
And they look at the chart and it's like, what happened there?
Uh-huh.
I'm like, actually what happened there saved our business.
Yeah.
I scaled back. I took stores away and I put the pricing up. You know what's funny though? Sales have gone up since raising my price.
I'm not surprised by that.
It creates pattern disruption.
Yep.
I've talked about this with my friend Lex from Lexington Bakes. People look and they go, oh, $4.99, $4.99, $4.99, $4.99. Oh, three dates for $10.99? Why?
Those must be some special dates.
There must be some special dates. And you know what everyone said to me? Don't put it at $10.99. Be under $10. Put it at $9.99. And I said, no.
Yeah.
Psychology of pricing. Okay, I'm putting it at $10.99. If someone's not going to buy it for the dollar, okay. Like, it's fine. Your question was, the slowing the growth. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And slowing the growth, more money in the bank.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So I believe, as on your store locator, you're pretty focused on New York and LA, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of regions, but you are in some other locations around the country, right?
Yes.
So can you share with us like how you built out your indie regional chains? Like, what did that sales process look like? I know you're like, as a founder, from what I can tell, you're very, your sales are very founder driven, right? Like you're very involved in the sales process.
Very, yes.
Right.
Yes.
And I always recommend this for founders in the early stage, because I'm like, I can help you, but these buyers, they want to talk to you. They don't care about me as the advisor consultant. They want to talk to the founders. So talk to us about like what your sales process looks like and how you broke into like these regional chains.
Yes. So I would say 100% in alignment with what you're saying. The founder has to do the sales in the beginning. I was looking for primarily natural organic chains because I felt that, you know, we are a luxury brand, premium pricing, and with organic ingredients, and that's where we would fall into. I post a lot on LinkedIn. I try my best to find the right contact. I would call stores. Calling is also an art. Nobody calls anymore.
Right.
Calling, I'm going to shout out my old boss, mentor, Vito Antochi, vice president of Erewhon. If you want something done, call.
Yep. What a concept.
What a concept. If nobody answers and then you call and all of a sudden they take you seriously. It's like,
calling me. Yeah.
Yes. So that's one. Two, social media. A lot of retailers are actually on social media. Whether or not you know it, the buyers are on social media.
Yeah.
They're looking for products. And I know that because, it's not just like an Instagram account. Like, it's not Sprouts social media manager. It's Sprouts buyer who just has their personal Instagram is on social media.
Yes.
So you always remember that when you're posting. It's like you don't need to reach Sprout's social media account. It's just a person, an individual who's following you and you may not know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, of course, cold emails, cold outreach, and, mm-hmm. and making spreadsheets, tracking, and having a distributor. I think yeah. that, unpopular opinion, and it's a hot take. Yes, a distributor takes margin, but they help you close the deals for stores. Yeah. So yeah, you lose some, they take a cut, but in order to grow in the food business, you have to have a partner that's going to take you to the next level like that.
Yeah. You do. I know the distributor conversation. It's like I've seen lots of people do it without it. It's just very hard. I would say it's really hard, but I think you're in a unique situation too. Where are you stocked in UNFI and KeHE? Or are you just working with Foundation?
We are in UNFI.
You yes. are. Okay.
For the fresh market primarily.
Okay.
The fresh market is our largest account. Mm-hmm. We're in Atlanta, we're in Florida, West Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, all those states that we have presence in is through UNFI.
For all the listeners out there who are like just getting going into distribution, like what's your experience been with like UNFI versus Foundation? Like just give us a couple things.
A night and day, I'll say mm-hmm. that. It's not even a comparison. Try to always start with a smaller distributor because there are a lot of hidden fees mm-hmm. with large distributors, and because of bureaucracy, red tape, you cannot get the fee. It's very hard to get the fees reversed. And you don't know about these fees versus when you're working with a smaller company, you have direct contact with a person.
Yep.
And with UNFI, it's such a large company. You have to filter through so many levels of people to get to the person that will help. And UNFI is great.
Reach is amazing.
It reach is amazing. It's incredible. The purchase orders. But on the backside, if you are not prepared for the fees, it's tough.
Yeah.
To open up a new DC distribution center, you have a fee. There's marketing fees with them. Just the cost of doing business with them is very high.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to kind of like segue into, I want to talk about your Erewhon smoothie. Your Erewhon coffee drink, because that was such a brilliant collab. I loved it so much. And I also want to talk about your personal brand as well, too, because I feel like you do a really great job with your personal brand.
Thank you.
And I think that's how, you know, like if I really think back about how I learned about French Squirrel, separate from seeing you in Erewhon, your personal brand is what I really saw. So obviously your personal brand has been like a huge compliment to your brand growth, I would imagine.
I was going to say thank you. That compliment means more than you know, because I work really hard on trying to be transparent and authentic while blocking the noise of other people's opinions of me doing so. It's very hard.
Yeah, totally. So I want to hear about the Erewhon deal and like what it, can you just like talk us
yes.
through it? Like
yes.
how did it come to life? How long did it take?
I scheduled this before I left Erewhon.
Oh.
They schedule years now in advance. It's crazy. Wow.
Amazing.
Year plus. And before I left, I said, this is my dream. I want French Squirrel to do an Erewhon collab, and it was going to be a smoothie actually. And we switched it to a coffee, a peanut butter latte, because of what was trendy and hot. Mm. Peanut butter latte was going viral on social media. And we said, this is the pivot, is that we have to do a coffee. But I scheduled it while I was at Erewhon. And at the time they were doing, co-branded ones. You could split between two companies. They no longer do that anymore. But, we're a small business, and we couldn't afford the fees that it took to make this collaboration happen. And so I kindly asked if we could split it with another brand. And that's when we started doing outreach, and I started to ask around, and I contacted all the different, like some milk partners. And I knew about Willa's oat milk. They do a clean ingredient oat milk. And I knew Christina, she's great, the co-founder. And I contacted her and I said, do you want to do this together? And she said yes immediately. Yeah. And we split it. And they no longer do that, but that's where the collaboration came from, is that we had a milk partner and then the peanut butter. So we were going to do a peanut butter smoothie, but then it went into...
Yeah, turned into coffee. Yeah.
Yes. What was amazing about this collaboration, though, is it opened up a whole new revenue stream for us, which is food service. So for everyone listening, you know, wholesale, like in bulk peanut butter pails. I had never in 4 years, never done anything like this. We got the 15-pound pails and filled them with our date peanut butter.
Specifically for this collab.
Specifically for this collab.
Great.
And now my manufacturers are so on it with it because of our experience with this with this Erewhon collab. So not only did we sell 12,000 lattes, which is crazy.
Wow, that's so cool.
12,000. When they gave us projections for how much peanut butter we needed to produce for this, I was like, what?
I didn't believe it.
No way we're going to be selling that many. We did. We sold more. They ordered more in the middle of the month of December.
Oh, wow.
Because it was flying. Uh-huh. And it opened up a new revenue stream for us, because now I sell that 15-pound pail to other customers. We sell to Oasis Cafe in New York, and they make a peanut butter latte, and they're ordering pails on pails of our date peanut butter, and it only activated because of this collab.
Oh my God. By the way, your peanut butter is so good. The date peanut butter. I just recently tried it.
I eat it every day.
Yeah, no, I had it at Expo, and then I bought it the other day, and I got like my whole family, my kids like it too. They were like, they're super into it.
Oh my God, thank you.
The date chunks and the,
yes,
the like the peanut butter bits. I love it. Or the nut bits. I mean, okay. So 12,000 units. That's amazing. So was this a profitable brand partnership for you, or was this more of a awareness play? Like,
great question. It's all marketing expense.
Yeah.
For all of them. Like, they do purchase the peanut butter for the collaboration. Mm-hmm. They do to offset the marketing expense. So you put up money for the marketing. So this is how all the smoothies and collaborations work at Erewhon.
Okay.
And they are still purchasing the food service item for the collaboration.
Got it.
And so in that way, we did have income from the drink, but it's still the marketing expense is higher. So.
Got it. Okay. So
And it was 100% worth it, and I would highly recommend.
So your revenue from this collab was from the bulk peanut butter then?
Correct.
Got it. Okay.
Yes.
So and then I remember like during the collab, you're like, oh my God, we're sold out.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What did you sell out of? Was it was the peanut butter that you sold out, or the other products?
The peanut butter only, the date peanut butter. Yeah. It was wild. Like all on shelf at Erewhon, gone. My Amazon orders for the peanut butter, TikTok shop, going like this. It was crazy. And I launched this peanut butter as a line extension, transparently.
Yeah.
And for those listening, like, line extension kind of means just like you're adding it to your set, or, you know, it's not like a product where you're like, this is going to be the newest, greatest thing, which I thought it was the best peanut butter ever, but I didn't launch it thinking that it was going to be my top seller. And I thought that this is my hot take, and I wonder what you are going to say, Danielle. I thought the food industry and the CPG space was going towards snacking, packaged snacks, on-the-go snacks, convenient snacks. This caught me by surprise, this peanut butter revolution. Mm-hmm. On TikTok Shop, you can see on TikTok, all these people are making videos of scooping peanut butter and dripping peanut butter. Like, I think we're taking a step back to real food and food that people understand and know. And that's why our peanut butter is blowing up right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it was about all these like packaged snacks, convenient things, da da da. So how come my peanut butter is, it's in a glass jar?
Because people want real food and real ingredients. And there's so many of us, like you and I, that got really sick. And often, and I always say this, like I share the obsession with the industry that you do. Like I have, like I'm obsessed as well too. I love it. I always have. Yeah. I've been in this business now for 16 years and I know all the brands out there, but probably 80 to 90% of the brands I obsess over, but I don't actually purchase and eat them myself because there's just too many ingredients. And I have to really watch what I put in because of my inflammation that I've had. And you and I aren't alone, right? Like there's so many people out there that struggle with the same thing. And the awareness around that is really building. So when I am shopping, though I do love packaged snacks, I buy very minimal. But very what minimal. I lean into are single to 4 or 5 ingredient SKUs max that like are just basic, basic, basic. And that's how I'm like maintaining my health. And I think more and more people are feeling the same way, you know?
100%. And to tie in your question about the personal brand, because I believe this is what's funneling sales for our peanut butter as well. So that was, by the way, to just go back quickly, that was extremely hard for me when we were sold out of peanut butter during the biggest collaboration that we've ever had. Oh no, there were some tears, unfortunately, because I couldn't, I remember I sent myself into a spiral, an emotional spiral, which I'm not proud of, but it happens sometimes. The lead time for the ingredients to get, I was out. Completely. Yeah. My manufacturer said, I'm sorry, we can't slot you in right now.
Yeah.
We can't. So I was in the middle of the biggest collab and I had no peanut butter.
Yeah.
Not the bulk peanut butter. That we had plenty of. I meant the jars.
Okay.
So the collab was continuing.
Okay.
But no one could buy the jarred peanut butter
I get it. You couldn't support you didn't have the inventory to support all of this like new revenue that was coming in, the awareness around the peanut butter. Yeah.
And that was my mistake. And so for everyone listening too, like if you have a big marketing collaboration like this, produce more than you think that you'll need. I don't know. It didn't cross my mind. Unfortunately, I mean, it crossed my mind that we would have a spike in sales, but I didn't think like that.
Like that.
So to tie in your question about the personal brand, at the same time around all of this, I was sharing my gut health journey on Instagram, on TikTok, primarily TikTok.
Yeah.
And a lot of holistic practitioners will tell you to avoid peanut butter, actually, because of its high mold content. Mm-hmm. So I started making content about why our peanut butter is gut health friendly and why other peanut butters aren't.
Yeah.
Okay. And it wasn't for marketing. I was just sharing my personal health journey saying, they were like, oh, you're eating peanut butter? How? And I would say, because I'm making this peanut butter, I literally know what's exactly in it. We test for mold. Mm-hmm. And a lot of peanut butter brands on shelf have mold and you don't know it because it's sitting on shelf for years from these big box brands that have been produced for like a year out. Also, we use organic peanuts, blanched peanuts that are easier to digest. Mm-hmm. And so while I was following the Candida diet, after the first 30 days of like the gut healing, I started to introduce my peanut butter back in because I was comfortable with that. And everyone was commenting, what is this candida-friendly peanut butter? What is this mold-free peanut butter? And I believe that's what's funneling into my...
I think so. I think so too, for sure. So I want to talk about lessons for CPG founders. It takes so much guts and grit to get into this business, right? Like you didn't really start with a plan. And I feel like people that get into CPG so oftentimes get into the business just because they're naive and they want to start a brand. They don't really realize how hard and how niche it is, how much money it takes, how much there is to learn, how the margins can just be like so razor thin. Mm-hmm. So do you think if you knew that getting into it, like when Vito first told you, Sydney, you need to package these, like if you really understood that, would you have gotten into this business?
I think I would have because of knowing the impact mm-hmm. that I've had on people.
Yeah.
Through this, like the messages that I get from other women about how our snacks have helped them so much with their own health journeys. But if you ask me on the side of like the business part of it, where you say, would you have done this knowing that it would be this much of a struggle mm-hmm. to get to the point in to the business where it's actually, you know, profitable and has positive cash flow? No.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Honestly, no. I if someone told me this, and maybe that's my spiritual assignment, or you know, maybe this is what I had to go through. Of course, like I'm grateful for the process. I would do it all over again. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, no one looked me in the face and said, this business is going to be really tough. The mm-hmm. margins are razor blade thin. Nobody told me that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what allowed me to do it because I was naive and had no idea what I was doing. And I was like, da, da, da. And I just, you know, little Miss Innocent in the food business. But no one told me this is going to be freaking tough.
Yeah, right.
So maybe on that end, maybe I wouldn't have.
Yeah, it's interesting. So many people, I think, that's how I got into it. You know, because I was a founder. I've been a founder twice. And just being naive about what it actually takes and like the amount of cash. And so biggest piece of advice mm-hmm. for a founder that's just starting out, one piece of advice.
Don't listen to what everybody else is doing or what every product is being priced at. Ask yourself, how can the business stay in business? And that's how I'm going to price the product. Mm-hmm. Pricing is one of the most, it is the most important thing, how you price your product. So don't worry about what consumers won't pay or will pay. Mm-hmm. Think about what price do I need to charge to stay in business?
My advice. Yes, brilliant advice.
The second thing is my quote from the founder of LinkedIn.
Oh, please share.
If you aren't embarrassed by the first version of your product, you've launched too late.
Mm.
Everyone is focused on this branding, this graphic design, this packaging, this taste. Just do it. Just start and iterate. You don't have mm-hmm. to have the perfect version of anything. I look at my little cellophane bags that I packed my protein bites in the beginning with a little label on top. How I'm embarrassed by that now. But look how far we've come.
Yeah, you know? Totally. So, okay, I love that. What is next for French Squirrel?
Humongous retail expansion.
Mm-hmm.
All over.
Yeah.
All over the globe. But primarily in, you know, first in the health food spaces, hopefully, mm-hmm. like the Whole Foods, Sprouts, Wegmans, and then, you know, eventually having the average American consumer access our products through Costco and Target and Walmart one day, hopefully, please mm-hmm. God, because that's the goal, is to get it to be able to have the average American be able to change their buying habits to healthier products. Mm-hmm. And I always say the way to do that is to support small businesses so that they can get the price down. You know, right. it's not helpful to any small business to hate on them for the price, because I guarantee you they're charging what they have to charge, not because they want to charge that.
Totally. Yeah. There's no early stage founder ever said that I want to charge you know, I want to be $4 or $5 higher than my competitors. No, that's not it. It's because that's exactly what you just said. Well stated. It's because they have to. Okay. So how do people find you and French Squirrel?
So you can find me personally, Sydney, on Sydney_KW on Instagram. On TikTok, I have 2 underscores, Sydney_KW. Okay. I'm also Candida Queen 444 on TikTok.
Love it.
It's my new side gig. And then French Squirrel, FrenchSquirrel.co on TikTok and Instagram, and FrenchSquirrel.com. And I also post on LinkedIn a lot. If you're interested in a lot of business updates, I'm on LinkedIn.
Okay, great. And we'll, don't worry, we'll link everything in the show notes as well so people can find you. So Sydney, thank you so much. This was such a fun conversation. I love diving into unit economics and like business strategy. So thank you for sharing, because I feel like this information is just so valuable for early stage folks. So thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
you. No, of course. And it's only something that I'm, you know, recently talking about and opening up about, and having conversations with, you know, women like yourself who are familiar with the CPG space. You know how to ask the questions that are actually specific to the industry. And it's amazing, because I wish that I could tell my younger self a lot of these things, but I had to get here to know all these things. So
it's part of the process, right?
Yes.
You know, so
thank you.
All right, Sydney, thank you so much for joining us.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes. Take care.
If you liked what you heard, it would mean so much if you follow and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. For tips and advice on your food and beverage CPG brand, you can find us on Instagram at itsallhappeningco, or visit our website at itsallhappeningagency.co to be the first to hear about workshops, courses, and in-person events and freebies. Until next week.